Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Full or part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The publisher, the professor, and the editor welcome you to The Media Project once again. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, is here. Professor, it's great to see you.
Thank you very much, Rex.
You're welcome. And publisher, Ira Fussfeld.
You phony!
Ira Fussfeld, publisher of The Daily Freeman in Kingston.
Thank you very much, Rex.
You're welcome as well. And I'm Rex Smith, editor of The Times Union, and I'm very welcome and quite sincerely happy to be here among our well-informed listeners, you know, because these are the people who are, according to the Farley Dickinson University Public Mind Survey, the best informed citizens in America. Those are people who listen to NPR. Isn't that something?
That's fairly ridiculous.
Did I read somewhere?
I get it.
I don't know if it was in this survey.
I'll get it too. Yeah.
There was a line I read somewhere that said, people who don't watch anything are better informed than people who watch Fox. I'm not making that up, am I?
No, you're right. It's at the very top. It's the lead. People who watch
they're worst informed, but this is suggesting they're not even, you don't watch anything and you'll know more than they do.
Well, it's probably true, you know, you don't watch television, you're smarter. But it doesn't suggest anything about radio in that effect. It's not true. NPR and Sunday morning political talk shows are the most informative news outlets, while exposure to partisan news sources, this update says, such as Fox News and MSNBC, have a negative impact on people's current event knowledge.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because every once in a while I'll get a letter from somebody saying, you know, you guys say Fox is partisan, but you're partisan, and NPR is partisan. Now, that is always, of course, in the minds of the beholder, Rex, and I'm convinced that the right wing in America has convinced itself that NPR is a left wing. I don't think so. I think, in fact, they've bent over backwards not to be, to the point that sometimes I'm a little disgusted. Nevertheless, any outlet that covers both sides of a story is going to be seen by the ultra-right for what they do on Fox as being, you know, left-wing. It's not that they're left, it's that they're fair.
I think you're right. People tend to think anything to the left or right of themselves is left or right, that they are what's correct.
You know? I'm really glad you think I'm right, because a lot of people think I'm left.
And meanwhile, I read somewhere that CNN's ratings are at the lowest that they've ever been.
Yeah.
And CNN is becoming...
Because they're fair.
Well, because they're fair, they're right. And
fairer.
But CNN seems to get boosted when there's a real breaking story.
When people really need news, when they need to know what's going on, they turn to CNN because they're looking for an accurate presentation of what's happening. But other times... You know, it's just not entertaining enough, right? Because it's truth.
Without question. You know, my least favorite program when I'm on the bike in the morning is Morning Joe. Sometimes when the old movie channel isn't what I want and they're not playing a Law and Order that I haven't seen three times, I'll actually watch it. And I'll watch this sneering, you know, sort of guy. And
you don't like Mika Brzezinski?
No. And nor do I like, you know, sneering Joe. Because I know, talk about partisan, and I know why he's there. He's there because MSNBC has been labeled left-wing. So they want to show some kind of a, you know, some kind of a balance. And what they do is they put this guy who is a right-wing conservative Republican congressman, and who carries that forward, in my opinion now, on the air.
Hmm.
And Brzezinski plays dummy to him. She's a very bright woman. I happen to know that. But whatever their arrangement is, you know, she can make a facial expression when he says something that's totally ridiculous, but she doesn't get in there and punch.
Hmm. That program apparently, though, is very highly regarded and heavily viewed by people on the inside, or inside the Beltway, as they say. That that the discussions that they have in the morning with all of the various people that come on. I don't totally agree with you about Scarborough. He is obviously to the right of what is normally on MSNBC, and I do think that's why they put him there.
So far, we agree.
Yeah, I don't find him lockstep with the right. He has been critical of a lot of the far right. I think he might have been considered radical right when he was in Congress. The Republicans have gone so far right now that he's closer to the middle than he is to the far right, and he tends to be critical of those to his right.
What are you becoming, an apologist for the right-wingers?
Yes, that's me. That's what they call me.
Right there with Roger Ailes. Roger Ailes, by the way, has been making a circuit of some commencement speeches, and he said at Ohio University, he said, New York Times reporters, quote, "They are a bunch of lying scum."
Yes, well, isn't tell us what
nice.
You really mean.
And then later, a senior
Fox... He said
Fox,
in the commencement speech?
Yeah, apparently maybe it was in response to a question. Yeah, yeah. He also said, he told University of North Carolina journalism students they should change their major, and that the reason he was qualified to run a journalism organization is that he doesn't have a journalism degree. Lovely fellow. Later on, a senior Fox executive came back apparently and said, well, he went too far. He regrets using that language because he liked Jill Abramson, the current editor. So... Ailes, who I think is a pox on journalism.
He is. What ails him?
Well, there's
you're just full of it today, aren't you?
There's just so much hyperbole in those comments, and that's not different than what is on Fox. There's so much hyperbole, and it's not doing any of us in the country or in journalism any good.
Nevertheless, I have to point out to both of you guys, even though I certainly agree with where you're going here, that it is the number one watched cable station, and therefore, this country's in trouble.
You know, there's an interesting thing that I'm grappling with as I think about the direction that the Times Union ought to go. And that is the notion that because straight news coverage is ubiquitous, that is, you can find
all
out in
place.
So many places where news is.
That's what ubiquitous means.
There you go. That what you really need a little bit more of to differentiate you from everybody else is voice. Yeah. Maybe that, of course, is what makes Fox popular, that it has voice. So as I think about the Times Union's future.
That's your paper for those people who are listening in Nacogdoches.
That's what I said at the beginning of the show, yes.
Yeah. Yes, you did, but somebody
people,
may.
Yeah, but the people in Nacogdoches are pretty smart. They know about this stuff.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah, they listen.
I stand corrected.
Thank you. Would you stand, please?
Not.
The fact is, there is a point of view widely espoused by some of the critics of the press that refers to the impartial voice, the objective voice, as the view from nowhere. That is, we who are trying to tell the news straight really are, and you've made this point, Alan, that we are concealing from people our true point of view by not telling them where we're coming from. Maybe we need to have more voice. Maybe we need to be a little bit more direct.
Give us an example.
Well, you know, we will tell people, here's what's going on in this particular community. Like here, in New York's capital region here, there's a city, a little city called Waterfleet, where there's a big old abandoned Catholic church. Five parishes have been brought together, and four of the churches are now for sale because there aren't enough Catholics in small urban centers anymore to support all those churches.
Or priests, I believe.
That too. So this beautiful big old church is likely to be torn down to make way for a supermarket. The planning board is now considering it. The question is, do you say on the one hand this, on the other hand that, and give people a real straightforward presentation, or do you try to find out what is the right thing to do, really, all the circumstances combined, and give that to people? Do you give people a bit of a twist on the news that you're giving them?
Let's twist again. But my question to you would be, isn't that an editorial?
It is. Has traditionally, it is. Maybe I'm conflating that a little bit with civic journalism, which tells people where to go and sort of helps people understand and make choices. The question about voice is, do you need to have more of a point of view as you're telling stories that is more specifically reflective of your biases rather than trying all the time to be so straight that you don't really give people a fair shake of what you're really saying?
I think we have to let Ira say something, although I resent it. Go ahead, Ira.
I think that using this specific example, that the public still looks for its newspaper, particularly its print newspaper, to outline the story and to present the pros and cons of the story, and using this as an example, I think that the importance of the story to them and the point of view, which is that this story is important, is offered by the very prominence and the amount of space that you're giving this story. You're saying to your readers, this is so important to you. Look where I'm putting it, and look how much room I'm devoting to it, and here's what it's all about. I think I would differentiate between that and what we are doing digitally, because on the digital side, we are eliciting more of the public's point of view. We are no longer the gatekeepers. We are getting, you know, it's the what if Elite is thinking of doing this, what do you think approach on the website. So I'm sort of sliding a little bit away from where you are, but I still like one foot in the traditional daily newspaper. Here's what's going on in our community, and here's what it's all about, and we'll tell you our opinion on the editorial page.
Is it print and digital where you draw that line? You would be straight in print and be more free in digital?
No,
tell them, Rex.
I think free in the sense that we are not going to be giving our opinion as much as we are soliciting others' opinion.
Aha. And what about those anonymous comments when people start making all kinds of nasty comments about the stuff online? Anonymously.
Well, yeah. You guys know how I feel about that. I mean, I think it's absurd that you make people sign letters to your wonderful newspapers, and you check them quite frequently to make sure, and you even edit them sometimes to make them look a little better in terms of the English language. And yet you allow the worst people in our society, the vipers, the snakes, one guy who takes six different names and goes on and hijacks this thing, and you allow it on your sites in order to drive people to your websites. I think it's disgusting and a shame, and I think we're coming to that point. In fact, I just read a story about two Republican legislators who had enough. Rex, perhaps we could enter that.
Well, actually, there are a couple of Republican assembly members from Long Island, which suggests how potent they are.
You mean that's sardonic, right?
Sorry, yes. But this bill would, it would require that if somebody sees something negative on the website that they don't like about them, like you see something on a website saying Alan Chartok is a jerk, you would call up the operator of that website and say, take it down, that's anonymous. And the person operating the website or the internet service provider would contact whoever sent that anonymous post and would say, you either identify yourself or we will remove it. And they would, by law, be required to remove it.
Well, first of all,
big deal. It ain't going to happen.
It's not going to happen. It doesn't have a chance in hell of happening. I think it's unconstitutional.
It's unconstitutional.
But let me just back up half a step to retrace old ground.
Wait. I'm so sorry. What? You mean if Rex, somebody writes a poison pen letter to the newspaper and it's filled with libels and...
Libel's a different matter. Libel's a different matter. If there's libel, you have protection.
Or
if you just don't like it.
No. I'm talking about some of these people who really...
Well, you said that we, meaning collectively Rex and I and
yes,
perhaps
you,
the entire industry, yeah, that are allowing these posts to go up. I can't speak for every newspaper that has a comment line, but most of them, I believe, do what we do, which is moderate the comments. So in other words, the worst of them, the ones that are really bad, are not getting up. The ones that do get up, in our view, are fair play. So now we start with that, and then secondarily, anonymity. Well, you know, these guys, these senators who are proposing this are saying, among other things...
Assemblyman.
Okay, if you see a letter to the editor in the newspaper, it always has a name on it. Well, yes, it does in most newspapers, but it is within the newspaper's right to have the letters
as
anonymous. The point is, what they're asking for is something that is done... Besides the fact that it's unconstitutional, these are editorial judgments to be determined by the editors and to be determined by the marketplace. And if the marketplace doesn't like either the comments or the letters to the editor or anything else in our publications, they're going to walk away. They're going to vote with their quarters or their clicks.
Look, you guys know. Rex knows he doesn't have a managing editor anymore in his paper. He doesn't have a secretary anymore. They haven't painted the walls in 5 years. He's got fewer reporters to work with. The Times-Picayune from New Orleans is going under. At least we don't know that it's going under, but we're reading stories.
Poor choice of terms.
Yeah, okay, I take it back. It looks like they're going to modify how many days a week they're printing. We're reading reports about that. And
we're all going to do that. It's just a question of when we stop printing.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Okay. Yeah. So this business, Ira, of saying that the newspaper does one thing, we do a different thing as if they're different. This is all the same newspaper. You've got the Kingston Freeman. Your articles are going to be online. And, you know, you have to be careful. And I don't think, and my whole point here is that the newspapers have the people to properly moderate these things.
Well, then, so what makes you think that anybody's going to have the people to have to remove any comments that somebody doesn't like? You know, as this law would require, you really can't be in favor of such a law as this.
No, I'm not in favor of the law, but I'll tell you what I am in favor of. I'm in favor of everybody doing their jobs, the kind of moderation that should be going on. I think the courts erred in saying that the IPO people who were putting this stuff up couldn't be held responsible and forced to say who, you know, who had done that. I think there are things that can be done. You know what's going to happen in America? There's going to come that day when instead of just politicians who have been creeped out, it will be the lady on the street who had some jerk who has an argument with her. And there'll be enough people so that there'll be a mass of rage about how this thing is working. And there'll be solutions to it.
I'm not sure. I think that there's so much out there that cyberspace is so plentiful that it is just like conversations. And so with all of that out there, I don't know that there are going to be limitations placed upon it. In responsible sites, you know, we've gotten better at this at the Times Union in recent years. We're doing a better job of making sure that the community conversations are a little bit less
vitriolic.
Harsh. Yeah, vitriolic. Right. Absolutely. Three-syllable word for the PhD, a much better
Well, I was going to call you on a couple that you used earlier, but I was a better person than you,
I know.
Didn't.
This is true.
And I would not, I have slowly, and it's taken a while because I've had to watch my own numbers, and I'm more encouraged by our own numbers. I don't necessarily think that if you're right about the Times-Picayune reducing the number of days and other newspapers following doing the same, which they will, that is yet another sign of the demise of newspapers. I am much more encouraged than I had been, say, a year ago about the future of newspapers, although I extend the definition of newspapers to the digital. If you want me to tell you that there will be print forever, I couldn't tell you that. But I do see that the business model in digital is working. The digital revenue is increasing significantly and rapidly, and the costs for the print product, which are significant, if they are slowly eliminated, it will continue to make the digital business model work well. And finally, the reading habits are such that people who are traditionally print newspaper readers are dying, and the younger generation and those to come are more likely to go to digital anyway. So we will be there. We will already have our flag planted in the ground, and hopefully we will be the newspapers of the future for them, just as the print version was for their parents and grandparents.
You must be exhausted.
Is that...
Where's the self-serving button?
I'm telling you, Ira, I don't like this one bit. I accuse you, Ira, because before you said, well, we allow one thing in our newspaper and we allow another thing in our digital operation. And I keep trying to tell you it's all one operation,
especially when
you're arguing that you're moving towards that, to moving the print over to the other side. Will you stop it?
No, it is a hybrid, but it is essentially a different product that we are producing online. We do things that we've never done before.
Well, you can have them answering and writing filth when they're picking up the paper. You know,
we could.
There are multiple products. I mean, just because it has the label Freeman, published by a Kingston Freeman Company or whatever it's called, doesn't mean that it has to be all one thing, that it is a monolith. Why do you think somebody as smart as Warren Buffett is buying newspapers? You know, he's bought the assets of Media General, which includes the Richmond Times.
I don't know what it's called, but you're right. People are buying into newspapers
because they know they're going to go to the web.
They see a future, and a lot of the heavy lifting in newspaper companies has already been done in terms of severely cutting staff and other overhead.
The money was already lost, so to speak. So maybe now is the time for newspaper companies to start making money, whether in print or online. Also, you know, the fact is the newspapers have this investment in their community. They are the idea centers and the conversation centers of their communities.
Agree.
The danger of it really is that as people increasingly find access to information digitally by referral, by social media, from Facebook and so on, that they won't be finding sites, locations to go to for information, that our brands will matter a lot less than they have in the past. And that could be still dangerous to all of us that have high overhead of having to support staff. But that's...
Well, it also leads to your point, your frequently mentioned point about news literacy, because there is so much information out there. There reaches a point where the public has to be able to determine where they're getting it from.
I know one character who goes around, he's not of the strongest character, goes around picking up and did early the names of newspapers, buying up the names.
Huh.
And, domain
names? Yeah, domain names, you know, because in the beginning, nobody had any idea where this was all going.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I don't actually know if we own TimesUnion.net,
for example.
Do we
whatever name you're using, you own. There may be others that are similar. You either own it or you're paying somebody to have it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. In fact, some years ago in our predecessor company, we received a whole list of names saying, are these still valid? Because we're going to get rid of them if you don't use them anymore. So there is a fee, I believe.
Oh, there is a fee. I know that.
So, but there's a franchise value to these brands, I think. And even if you stop printing in print, you still have that brand that has a resonance in your community.
Unless some nut has it already.
Yeah. Well, that's true. But one of the reasons that the Times Union had made this investment several years ago in the Times Union Center and the naming rights, I mean, this is not news to anybody. It's been publicly reported. There's a $3.5 million investment for a 10-year naming right. And that is in part because we believe that enhances the brand, that it will sustain the value of the Times Union as a brand, even as the print product gradually diminishes in importance in the digital world.
Yeah, and that's difficult to measure, isn't it?
And you have to watch out for that kind of thing, Rex, because you'll remember Enron Field.
Yes, absolutely.
When people go to a concert here, do they say we're going to the Times Union Center?
Yeah.
They
mm-hmm.
do. That's a commonly used... They don't say the Nick anymore.
The Pepsi. No. They use it now.
When you go to JFK Airport by car and you cross the Triborough Bridge, what do you call it?
If you're coming out of Manhattan, you call it 59th Street Bridge, but it is really the Ed Koch Triborough Bridge.
It's the RFK Triborough Bridge.
But if you're old enough, you continue to call it, and I will never call it anything else. In fact, I wrote a column about it. You'll call it either the Triborough or the 59th Street Bridge.
Right, right. The point being, and that's why I asked about the Times Union, because I wonder how frequently that name is ingrained upon people.
I think it's gotten through. I mean, of course, there's what airport do you fly into in D.C.?
Dulles or Reagan.
Ah!
Yeah, but that seems to work.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
But not national anyway.
Not national. Yeah. I still say national.
I still say national too for a good reason.
Well, I don't fly. I don't have the expense accounts that you guys have, so I don't get down there very often.
Anyway, finally, in lighter news, a reporter in the sports section made everybody who has ever had to take scores by telephone happy. I had this job when I was a young reporter. You sit there on a Friday night and you take all these scores and everything. And here's at the end of one, this fellow wrote, Haley Habits had a great year on the mound, but unfortunately no stats were available due to the coach's bull and laziness. We won't say that here, even on public radio. So the person wrote this in and felt really good about basically lashing back at the coach for not calling in bull and laziness. And the journalist has been fired.
Well, but what I suspect happened here was that the guy was unable to get the coach on the phone, wrote that with the intent of fixing it before it went into print, and then forgot about it and it got into print.
And right here at WAMC, we used to have a character on in the mornings named Robert J. Lertzimer.
He played
classical music. And he would also say, the news is prepared and written by Robert J. Lertzimer, which was nonsense because he was ripping it off the AP Wire. The AP Wire. And one day he got all confused and he couldn't find what he had ripped off, and he said, there is no news this morning.
The lesson with that computer thing is don't ever put anything in your computer if you don't want anybody else to see it, because it may well get out.
There you go. And don't say anything on the media project if you don't expect folks to hear it. There we go. All right. Thanks. We'll see you next week, folks.
Phew. Fooled them again.
floor. I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.